Pictures on. All right, everyone, welcome. Appreciate you coming and spending time with us. You're going to hear about the journey that we've been on at Ingersoll Rand for about the last year and a couple of months. So I'm director of the project and program management systems at Ingersoll Rand. Marcus Waldinger from Kapana and Schott, our configuration partner, is going to be helping me out with a portion of the presentation. So I know we've only got myself listed on the slides, but Marcus is going to be here helping us with the presentation. So I'm going to take you through a little bit about me, a little bit about our company, our organization, and then a little bit about the challenge that we met this year that we're deploying in our solution today. It's going to be a fairly high overview to give you a taste of the solution that we've put in place, the problems that we're trying to solve. Any technical information that you need afterwards, I've got both my email up here as well as Marcus's that we can get you guys some more answers. So a little bit about myself. The most important portion of this slide here is my lovely wife, who was able to join us here today, Jeannie. 20 years in product development and project and program management. Done a lot of work with project and portfolio resource management, of course, in the great Excel tool, getting everybody's spreadsheets from all different functional departments aligned. And then, of course, as soon as you get that done, they get unaligned. So I've been through that, got a couple of T-shirts and belt buckles from that type of work. I'm also a process and standard work student, so a DFSS black belt. It's something that, that I've worked with quite a bit during my career, both from necessity as well as improving the efficiency of our organization. So resident of Colorado, there's a picture out at my back door in Monument, Colorado there to the right. Also been a speed junkie with racing motorcycles and cars and all of those types of things since I was very young. Any of you that know anything about internal combustion engines will know that those push rods there on the left should like the push rods on the right. So a couple of mishaps along the way. There's a couple of my cars. I also just have a new BMW that we're going to be racing this year. So a little bit about Ingersoll Rand. So we're a diversified industrial corporation. We've got $14 billion worth of revenue. We've got around 900 facilities, 65 manufacturing locations. And we try to turn over our portfolio every 4 years. So quick math that tells you that our innovation portfolio is around $3.5 billion a year. And it's spread amongst several businesses. So you'll probably recognize some of these names here. The brands that we employ, Club Car, very, very famous leading golf cart and utility transportation vehicle devices. We also have our Ingersoll Rand brand of products, air compressors, everything from a small piston positive displacement pump compressor up to large 450 kilowatt bottle blowing type huge air moving equipment. We also have aero fluid pumps. We have a material handling division that does everything from come along chain hoist winch to the large blowout preventers that you would see in oil field capping applications. And we also have our parts and accessories and comprehensive services. One of the unique things about our business, we not only offer products for sale, we also offer end-to-end solutions and services for our products. And then there at the bottom, our Trane HVAC business, a place that I spent 16 and a half years. Working great company, great product, great brand equity, great addition to our portfolio. The four pillars that make up our corporation, this is really who we are as a business, as an organization. Sustainability, Ingersoll Rand is listed on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. One of the first companies that was listed on there. We're also on the NASDAQ, and we're rated, I believe the last time I saw, we were 107th rated by Newsweek in sustainability for U.S. companies and 204th globally. So something that's really important to us. We've got metrics that we measure on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis, reducing our global footprint, reducing our greenhouse gases, reducing our waste, our scrap, and also trying to improve our energy efficiency as an organization, as well as with the products and services that we offer to other folks. Community involvement, we log several hundred thousand hours of volunteer time every year in the communities that our businesses are globally positioned in. We have a very strong outreach program. We have very strong programs with people like the Marion House and organizations that give back and manage community welfare. Diversity inclusion, this is one of the major initiatives that our current CEO, Mike Lamach, brought to the table with our organization. We think it's not only just a business imperative, but also a social and ethical responsibility to our company and to our employees. And then the big one up here, why we're here today, innovation. As I said, we try to turn over our portfolio every 4 years, so we get 25% of our products through new offerings and services through innovation, which means when you think about the product, the brands up there that you saw, that's a lot of information, a lot of data to manage, a lot of projects to manage, and as you'll see, a fairly complex resource model to manage as well. So our current program mission. When we're looking at our growth through improved margins through our innovation, we have to be able to reliably and repeatedly produce the goods and services that we're after, measuring our efficiency, measuring what we're doing, how we're utilizing our resources, how we're delivering, how we're able to forecast that delivery, how we're able to efficiently utilize our very valuable innovation investments. So we don't just innovate to innovate. We try to understand how we're going to create new value for the customer, how we're going to create new value for the industry, how we affect all of those parameters, and how we deliver those and sustain a profitable growth model. So when we look at that internally, we think not only how do we understand what to do next, but how do we do it better and cleaner each time we do it? And one of the major focuses we have is on building our capability of our resources, building the capability of the processes, and how we're going to execute those both today and then what improvements we're going to make moving into the future so that we do understand how we're performing and how we're going to perform in the future. I've been fortunate enough to be director of a couple of different program management offices through my career. Started out luckily with one that was fairly small and ended up with one that was fairly large, managing about $500 million worth of innovation across several different geographic regions, and had about, I think at one time we had 17 PMO staff on hand, and about 102 major projects and programs going on. So doing all of that off of an Excel spreadsheet, or several Excel spreadsheets, used to have a lot more hair than I do now. My wife can attest to that. But it was a difficult task. So now we go back to why I've been a fan of project and portfolio management since 2005, right? Because some of those things became a necessity for us. When we started looking at utilizing and developing a system to control and manage this innovative growth, once again, we focused on building the capability and building the functionality into our business operating system. So we have a governing operating system for nearly all of our processes and our functional streams, and this one obviously was one of the most important. So understanding what we're doing up front, how we're looking at the market, how we're measuring our competitive space, how we're measuring our customer space, and then how we meet those needs from an engineering standpoint, how we execute. One of the things that we've dealt with for quite a few years, because we are diversified industrial, and we've acquired businesses, and we've kind of collated these businesses into a single entity, was we had all these disparate processes, not only within our financial systems, our MRP systems, but also obviously in our product development systems, because when anybody comes on board, they've got their own way of doing things. So 2 years ago, we started a journey to consolidate, take the best practices of all of those product development processes, and to come up with a single process to govern, manage, and execute our innovation projects. And that framework that we use is not just for innovation. That's going to be scalable to the IT work that we're doing, the sustaining work that we're doing. And in a company our size, 46,000 employees scattered across all of those 900 locations, you can imagine the proliferation of projects that we've got. So we're just talking about the innovation space here. And you think about all the projects that are going on in the operational space, in the IT space, it gets very large very fast. So with that in mind, we have to know at any given point in time or have a pretty good idea where those projects are that are in flight, where the projects are that are coming on board that are supposed to be starting, and what our selections are based on the changes that happen very frequently here, and be able to react to those both with our portfolio management as well as the new offerings that we're bringing to the table. So we started with a rather lengthy hypothesis in order to be able to continue to delight our customers and exceed the pace of our peer groups. We need to be able to maximize the potential or the effectiveness of what we're doing with the money that we have, with the very valuable resources that we have, and with the innovation enabling tools that we have, once again, to reliably and repeatedly deliver on those dollars and those innovation promises. So starting with that common approach, not only to the process, but also with a system to support that process was something that was going to enable us to build our capability internally, as well as our functionality and ability to execute and manage projects. So the future state benefits that we understood that we needed to be able to deliver on was have an enabling technologies tool set to support both the processes and the people that were in play, have a common language and understanding. That was something else, that our vernacular was a little disparate in how we were talking about projects, how we were talking about the risks, and how we were talking about the states or phases of our in-flight projects. So we adopted, of course, the PMBOK and set about a process of training all of our known project managers at the time, and we integrated a lot of that vernacular into our standard process and our standard tool set as it relates to our portfolio and project management system. Obviously, some of the benefits you get out of this, along with the tracking, the understanding of where you are at any given point in time with your portfolio, where you are with your projects, is a part of that system and is plan on being one of the big ticket items that improves our execution and success rate. So the increased visibility, so we have multiple portfolios within our business. We have multiple resource groups within our business. And as the owner of a PMO, I'd have to normally go to three or four different places to understand what the portfolio view was, what the project execution view was, obviously I would get from my guys, but then understanding where resources were disappearing to, why they were disappearing, why there was another list of priorities out there that were consuming some of the valuable people that my guys had signed up to execute on projects, was going directly to the resource groups. So pulling all of that into a common comprehensive system obviously cuts down on all of that churn and all of that wasted time and energy. The benefit of having Project Analytics, we saw in the keynote today a lot of valuable tools that we're just now learning to use in flight with our system. So here's where it gets a little bit dicey. So we just reorganized into 11 strategic business units. When we started the journey with this system, this was the construct of our company. So we had a sector that was our industrial sector, we had a sector that was residential, and another that was our climate solutions sector. So nested within our industrial sector were five independent businesses. So these independent businesses would be our air products, our compression technology, our aerofluid pump technology, our material handling division, and club car products were in there as well. So across each one of these sectors, we have a global engineering and technology set of groups that manage and are leveraged within each one of those businesses and within each three of these sectors. Also, a network of excellence, our subject matter experts in things like material and chemistry, modeling and simulation, heat exchangers, those types of things, are also shared and leveraged resources. And then we also have shared functional groups. So these would be people like procurement and finance groups, some of which are nested within the businesses, some of which are nested within at the sector level, serving multiple businesses. So you can start to see the ball of yarn that we create here when we start to think about things like security models, categories and permissions, and those types of items, coming up with a system that will allow people to see their data set, and their data set only, because one of the pieces of feedback that we got from folks is, hey, I don't want to see everybody's project. I want to see the stuff that's in my portfolio, right? The stuff that's in my system, I want to be the things that I'm going to work with, things that I'm going to affect change over. So this created a bit of a five-dimensional chess game where we've got, you know, our normal scope, our budget, and our resources within each project. But then each one of those projects or programs resides in a business space and could reside in multiple business spaces if it was a sector-wide project. Now let's layer over the top of that five geographic locations of launch. Right, so we've got a product that's going to launch in China. We've got a project that's going to launch in the U.S., one in Latin America. So you can see the complexity that we've created with some of those, and each one of those is time-bound. So you get a very complex thing that we're just calling, hey, this is a program that we're going to develop a new centrifugal compressor with 15 iterations that become 15 different projects with specific development engineering resources, with shared procurement resources, with shared program management resources. And we create this superhighway of 1,000 projects, right? When you look at the total innovation portfolio that we have that encompasses the big picture. So what invariably happens with projects? Tell me out. They always end on time, right? They change, scope changes, things changes, people change, things are late. You find rework loops. Well, imagine these 1,000 cars, you're on a 6-lane highway. How many of those cars does it take to hit the brakes before you run into some problems? 2, 3? Well, what happens when 20 of our major programs experience a month or 2 month delay? All right, we start to get this concertina effect. Right, we see these projects ebbing and flowing, and I could see it on my spreadsheets when I was up late at night and Jeannie's telling me, hey, you need to come to bed. Right, I'm trying to figure out, why is all this stuff moving? Why don't I have these resources to start this new project that we've got to start? Because there's a very high strategic need for this, but we don't have two of the technical resources we need, so we're going to go ahead and start it anyway. Right? What are we doing to that chain? We're jerking it again, right? So we create all these different ebbs and flows of resources and projects, and Everybody wants to know, why isn't this project ready, right? Why isn't this project started? Well, it's a little complicated, right? which nobody ever really wants to hear. So we have this in spades, not having a dynamic system, not having a dynamic solution to be able to look at where our resources are leveraged, where our resources are being utilized, where they're going to be overutilized in the near future. Who are our people that are highly leveraged that we can't start something unless we have them? Right, so not having a system to forecast and plan these things, we're just constantly reacting. Now we're into a reactive mode. We can never get over that proactive planning barrier. So I'll talk a little bit about, so with that being said, talk a little bit about the maturity of our organization. So we have very excellent engineering resource managers and functional resource managers. So our physical budgeting process, everybody looks at the projects that are in flight, the ones that we're going to keep, the new projects that we've got to have coming from an innovation standpoint, the strategic initiatives, and we plan all that out. So our resource managers are excellent about creating huge spreadsheets, right, where we're allocating people out, we're making sure we've got all the projects covered, we've got everything time-bound, we understand about where we're going to phase in and phase out of our different gate cycles, and we put that information together right around the time that that the pumpkins are coming out, right about the time the turkeys come out, we put a stamp on it. And guess what happens on January 1st? How accurate do you think that information is? Right? It was obsolete the day we published it. Then we continue to react throughout the year, but once again, people are very good. They understand how to use tools. They understand how to use their analytics, but they can't forecast when things are going to be late or when they are late, how we're going to be able to react to those and how that affects everything else down the pipeline of our projects. So the second PMO that I was fortunate, so this was the last PMO that I had was this industrial business program management office. The program management office that I ran before that was largely a productivity and service initiative office. So much smaller type initiatives, but more of them. So at any one point in time, we had about 700 projects in our portfolio over in this side of the business, productivity initiatives that we're running for safety, for sustaining, for the efficiency, enabling technologies that would come along. And we only have 11 people running all those projects. So you've got sub-project managers to sub-project managers. Some of those people aren't project managers. They're leads in procurement or leads in other businesses that may have not been trained on productivity. And once again, what are we using to manage that pipeline of information? Excel. Awesome. Okay, so hopefully I haven't painted too dreary a picture of here because we made this work. Right, we've been doing this. We've been successful at doing this. We've been successful at planning our portfolios to a certain extent. We've been successful at planning our resources and being able to react to some of those things. But obviously, the churn and inefficiency that's involved in that is something that was untenable for us. So our approach to resolve this issue was to look at creating a new solution, coming back to some of the basics, blocking and tackling. Understanding what are the tenets that we really need to get right to understand this, how do we grow it, how do we build it, how do we crawl, walk, run. So the scope that we set out for ourselves is along the abscissa here. What types of projects are we going to pull in? When are we going to enable different process types, because remember I talked about that framework that we developed. We've got to adapt that framework to our execution and our planning. And then our functionality here is on the ordinate. So what types of things are we going to be able to have at our hands for, that the tool is going to help us with, that we're going to enable the tool to do, that we're going to leverage the tool, and that we're going to expect results from. So where we are in our journey right here, we're just releasing this this first release of our product functionality, which you see in the yellow boxes where the intersection of our scope and functionality intersect here. So I've taken some of the names of these off because some of this information obviously is proprietary. We have one of our functional groups, so this is our engineering functionality here that's mainly focusing on innovation. And we're building out this functionality in a set of phase time-bound releases throughout the course of the next year. So people wanted to know, Rob, people kept asking me, Rob, what are we doing differently? What is this tool going to really enable us to do? So I created this cartoon to help people visualize what this meant, because we have people that are very good program managers that are excellent at planning projects, that can create awesome project plans and resourced plans, which is indicated here in the center. And they're like, what does this mean to me? Why do I need to pay attention to this? So each of our initiatives has some opportunity, some innovation, some new value that we're delivering to the customer, something that we need to react to that's either creating a new piece of innovation for us, that's adapting a piece of products and services that we currently have in our portfolio, or a new service that we're offering to our customer base that we need to describe in a scope of work, which then we can set apart and create an opportunity to sit down with our cross-functional leaders and team members to break that work down into a scope in a WBS and some type of a plan. So that plan creates a forecasted demand from our resource pool. Those resource pools could be people, money, or equipment. Obviously, that we've got a finite amount of, that we then have the owners of those turn our generic forecasted demand into resource allocations. So what are the chances that all of these resource allocations are going to be met? Right? Pretty small. Never happens. Right? So that's where the negotiation process comes in, and this is a piece that we were missing a lot of times. The people put a plan together, they got a name back, they're assuming that that name is going to fulfill all of their needs on the project. Well, a lot of times it was not only a false assumption, it was known up front that that probably wasn't going to happen. And then we report our progress back in the form of our time actuals to our plan, creating a closed loop system here. Right, so now we can do some magical things like calculate earned value and where we are from a progress spend, where our budgeting plan was versus where we should be. And I think this really cemented for a lot of people the foundational things that we always assumed, but we knew we had missing pieces of. So that was our current state. And like I said, we had maturity around a lot of these areas. We had people that were very good at managing their initial resource allocations. We had people that were very good about planning their portfolios and what projects we should do next. And then we had Murphy coming in and changing things and affecting the best laid plans of mice and men, right? So when we set about implementing our system with these tenets and these rules under place, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel for some things that we already had. We wanted to get in quick, start getting people using our system, which was on, which is on Project Server 2013 on-premise. So we leveraged a lot of the assets that we had. So we already had defined business cases as a part of our standard process development. We already had defined risk assessment and mitigation tools. And we had several other categories of assets that were on our business operating system. So we wanted to integrate those assets. We didn't want to recreate all that information in Project Server in the app. So we leveraged these. Compound and Schott had a very valuable tool that we were capable of using to extract that data, to keep that asset intact, keep it on our collaboration site, make changes to those assets, and have that information flow flawlessly up to our project database and therefore our reporting and where we are from a current state at any point in time with our system. So in this first release, we leveraged these assets that we could. We also gave people the capability to either create schedules on their projects using the PWA application or import from their existing project plans and schedule, and then pull the rest of the assets down from our business operating system and integrate as we needed to. So the big picture of what we did, this is a little bit way the matrix chart for a lot of people was too much of an eye chart, so this gives you a little bit clearer picture of what we did from both an asset standpoint as well as our project-based engineering standpoint. So we tackled two of our biggest processes and our biggest project types and integrated those solutions into our Common Project Planning and Tracking System is the name of the program that we're running to implement this, and built upon our pillar of our project management competency capability through our PMBOK training and learnings there, bringing people up to speed on actual execution, developing our common vernacular, our common set of understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about execution. We've got our common process base here that we've talked a little bit about, that we're doing things all in the same way. So this enables us, we go to our DFSS learnings. Now what can we do here, since we've got this commonality? Anybody? Just set a baseline, right? If you're all thinking about things, talking about things, and doing things the same way, now you can understand your process, you can measure it the same way, and understand all the variation, understand where the special cause is coming from. We didn't have this functionality before because we were doing things in 16 or 17 different ways along different parts of their process. Well, so that project's in phase two, right? So you should have a concept done. Well, no, that's this type of project. So what they're doing in phase two is just understanding the requirements document. So we got into those types of discussions, and you really can't improve your processes when you have that much variation listed within the confines of them. So Marcus is going to talk to us a little bit about the front-end process. So when we started looking at developing this system and the benefits that we wanted out of the system, we looked at a couple of different options. We looked at Project 2010. We also looked at the online Project Online, and we looked at 2013 on-premise. So Marcus and his team were able to come in and help us out with some of that analysis, and he's going to walk us through some of that now.
Well, thank you, Rob. So my name is Marcus Waldinger from Campana and Schott Incorporated, but maybe you hear it because of my accent. My roots are back in Germany, and the roots of Campana and Schott are in Germany as well. So when I did get a call from Ingersoll Rand, I think it was in February 2013,
yep.
We talked a little bit about the situation, what they wanted to do, and then I thought, maybe that's a good idea. I fly over to the States and we start look at a tool that can support their processes, because they have the maturity, they have the processes in place, they have the experts for the different areas, but the only thing that was missing is a central system to support all that stuff. So let me ask you a question. You heard some of the requirements, you heard some of the challenges, several business units, different project types, a process. How long do you think does it take us to build a prototype to assess the system and to have a look at the functionality? Do you think it takes longer than 2 months? Raise your hands. Who do you think it takes around about 4 weeks?
Great question.
who thinks it takes actually 6 days to build a prototype for this kind of application? Well, the truth is 6 days. We started with an assessment. So I came to Ingels & Rand, we talked about all the requirements, and within 2 days we had Project Online as the environment up and running. We looked a little bit more into the details. We talked about the processes. Next 2 days after, we had a workflow in place that could at least support one of the project types and a very simple stage gate process with 5 gate approvals. And then the tricky part began. The devil lies in the details. So we looked at reporting. Okay, we have some reporting with Project Online. But maybe not the way Ingels & Rand is used to, and not the way they want to use it. So this was one thing we had to look more in detail. Another thing was, what are the chances to extend the system with some custom code, some custom development? Maybe not all the out-of-the-box functionalities are sufficient enough to fulfill all our requirements. So during that assessment, we built a SWOT analysis with a lot of dimensions, and we looked at every dimension in detail. At the end, we came up, what consultants always do, with a chart showing some information and presented Ingels & Rand a basis for their decision. We compared Project Online with Project Server 2013 running in their own data center, but also Project Server running on a hosted environment, excuse me. And we also compared it to Project Server 2010 because one of the sectors is using Project Server 2010. And we will sooner, we will migrate that as well. So when you can look at that spider chart, you see the workflow engine, reporting engine. So Project Online, from the Ingels & Rand perspective, was not as good as Project Server on-premise. But still, we had the Project Online in place. We had a proof of concept actually running. We could use it. We could present it to the people. So I think that was the fastest functional deployment I ever did so far. But at the end, we decided to go with Project Server on-prem. Because of the reporting engine, we don't have a cube in Project Online. So slicing, dicing through the data, through your portfolio, having different views for each sector wasn't not as simple with Project Online as it is with a on-prem installation. The whole deployment process. Okay, in Project Online, 2 days, then you have a running environment, but we want to connect it to LOB systems. We want to connect it to the Active Directory, PeopleSoft. We want some resource data from the HR system. All that having in mind, Project Online did get a few points less than actually Project Server. And the biggest part, the chances to extend. So right now we're implemented release 1 with a lot of out-of-box functionality, but we already had release 2 in mind with some more customization around, and that was also a reason to go on-prem. Rob mentioned it earlier. One of the approaches was to reuse existing assets. So they already had a huge Excel document to build business cases for project. We used that existing asset. It will be put on a project side. Our middleware called CS Connect will pull the data, will push it into a reporting database, and then you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So from a customer perspective, there are also some differences.
So when we looked at both of the options, obviously with all this churn and the way we were going about managing our portfolios, managing our resources, we were data hounds, right? Because we wanted to know what was going on. We knew we had to look in several different places to get a good feel for what the situation was, what we were going to have to react to, and where we needed to be positioning ourselves. So I would expect over time, as we mature into this system, that our needs for data should go down as we get clarity to how we're looking at things in the system, how to use the data that we're actually getting out of the system. I fully expect that the number of data points that we're capturing and looking at will probably be reduced by a factor of 10. But today, in the current state where we are, the online version just did not give us enough visibility to that. When we look at the functionality that we had with PSI and what we're going to go to with the OData feeds and where that was at when we were looking at this back in April, May time frame, that's how we came to, from a customer standpoint, how I came to the recommendation back to our organization as to what we should start with, what we should fill our needs with some possible plans to migrate into the future. But it was really around how we were going to be able to extract and manage the information that we were getting out that drove us to the on-prem solution. So when I said about organizing our plan, Marcus and I sat down, and we tried to really plan as much of the work as we could in modules, so that we could pick in place, be able to react to changes that we knew we were going to see through, you know, some of the risks and issues that we identified early on in the program. We knew that we were probably going to be starting and stopping some of our initiatives, or there was a high risk capability built in there that we knew we were going to have some flexibility in our plans. So we broke things up into bite-sized pieces as much as we could to modularly roll out this functionality to be able to test and build as we went along through the process. Okay. Also, as Marcus alluded to, we thought a lot about our feature considerations, not only for release 2, but releases 3 and 4. How are we going to integrate with the other elements in our organization, with the other connected processes that we have, that are coming out of and going into our OBIE model with Oracle, and also our PLM management systems, considering how each one of those processes work, how we need to configure the system for future capability, and have the correct attributes and the correct functionality there as well. So a lot of these dotted lines over the course of the next couple of months will be turned into solid lines with solid plans that will go back to our resourcing and scheduling modularity. Didn't know you were going to get to be the click guy, did you?
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about the solution itself. I hope I don't get too technical. Raise your hand, stop me if I talk too much about the technical stuff, but I'm really amazed about that solution we built here for Ingersoll Rand. First of all, release 1, everything out of the box. So that means for me, when I can do it, I'm not a developer, that it's out of the box. I can use the tools I have. I can configure the system. In this point, we're talking about a Ingersoll Rand product development process. It's a stage gate process. We have several approvals. And the tricky part is per business unit, we have 11, or even per product line, we have different levels of approvers. So we came up with an approver matrix, and we built a workflow that looked up the information from the project plan, assigned the approval tasks to the right approvers so that we can fully support that Ingersoll Rand workflow. We started with having 3-4 sectors in mind. Now we have 11 business units and the workflow is in place. Of course, that complexity wasn't built in 6 days. That took a little bit more, but still with the tools I got, so SharePoint Designer to mention, and the engine we have with Project Server or Project Online would be possible as well. So this was one piece of the puzzle. Next one, CS Connect, a middleware from Companion Shot, designed and specified to connect basically SAP with Project Server. Over the years, the tool was developed to connect any structured data to Project Server, and nowadays even to Project Online. And I didn't know that when I started that project, but CS Connect became kind of a Swiss knife for us. We used it to extract data from the Active Directory, where we had the employee information, the manager information, so that we were able to build the resource breakdown structure. We used it actually to turn info path data into project data. So when you remember one of the slides with the engineering technology centers, they are cross-sector working people. They had a workflow in the past filling out forms with some milestones, with some resource data. We pulled that information from InfoPath and pushed it into Project Server so that we have the full perspective there and every information in a single place.
So we created almost 400 projects over the course of a couple of days in the system from existing InfoPath forms that were resident on our SharePoint sites.
But it was only very possible cool. Because you already had the maturity in place, the process in place, the data was in a very good shape, so we were able to pull it and push it to Project Server. CS Connect will have hopefully a good future at IngoSorrent. We will use it to connect to the HR system as well, maybe to some financial systems. So this will be then, I'm really excited about that solution, and it will be amazing. Another thing where project out of the box wasn't as good as it should be here for IngoSorrent, just keep in mind different business units. So the third thing that came to my mind was using the department field. That allows me to separate the cubes for each department or business unit to give the people their data they need. But the department field doesn't come with any security applied. So I still have to assign a project from a specific sector somehow to a category that all the portfolio managers in that sector can see the project. Maybe some of you want to think about RBS for using some dynamic security here. That can work. But here we have more a resource-driven perspective. So you're managing resources, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can see all the projects of those resources. So we had to build kind of a overlay security module, and we call it the CSMOE, the Matrix Organization Extension. And that simple tool does one thing. It looks all the projects, it checks a certain custom field, and it pushes the project into a security category. So to make it short, when you create a project with the workflow and you assign it to a specific sector or a product line, then this little tool will make sure that the portfolio managers of that sector or the product managers of that product line will actually see the project without having access to other sectors' data. This is one of the reasons why we also did go to Project Server, because we have just way more capabilities to enable the users to build their own reports. A lot of people I met at IngoSorrent are already used to Excel. They use it as a great tool, building some capacity sheets, some portfolio overviews. And with Project Server on premise, the cube behind, we delivered them the data sources they could connect to. So this was also one reason. Just a simple wrap-up of the different technologies we are using right now. We have reporting services in place actually embedded in the PWA on a PDP side. So really one look and feel for all the data, for all the people. But for those users who are used to the tools, we also offer Excel as a front end, Excel services, and we're using the PowerView technology in Excel. All right, so functional areas we're using at Ingersoll Rand of Project Server. Well, it's an easy answer. We use them all. We start basically with a workflow. So we're using some SharePoint social collaboration features. We will hear more about tomorrow in a session from Eric Schott and also in a session tomorrow by myself to gather ideas in the company. Then we're able to turn those ideas into projects, and we are then able to start, plan the projects, resource the project plan, execute the projects, and of course, closure them then with a successful result. We are also using strategic portfolio management. We're still defining and developing the business drivers, so I'm not allowed to talk about that part here right now. Sorry if you're interested in that part. But the technology we have in place, so we have a portfolio management analysis out of the box as it comes with project, and we're using the same technology actually to give people an overview over the innovation pipeline. So when are the projects in the portfolio? How many resources do I need? And yeah, giving here the people a better basis for their decisions. But in addition to the standard functionality of the portfolio analysis, we also have very enriched and complex reports in place. They use the data from prior systems and combine it with data in the new system so that we even are able to keep the history over several years. Because we already heard it. Ingersoll Rand exactly knows what they do. They know their job. They already have the data in some systems, and we're presenting them the opportunity to have it in one single system. The progress tracking, kind of standard in project, professional project server, of course. We have it here in place as well. And we benefit from the new functionalities of 2013 because a lot of that stuff can be done in the web application. So the PMO can go in at a gate review and set the baseline. They don't need the Project Pro client to do that. They can do that basically via the web. Our team members for time recording just use the web application. They don't need the Project Pro client. So at the end, several thousand users and several hundred project managers only uses the Project Pro. All the other thousand ones uses the web application.
So bringing us back both full circle, you see our objective statement there on top. Hopefully you understand now a little bit more about how we are trying to build our capability, both in the functionality of our resource set, as well as leveraging the technology in the tool set, both with Microsoft tools, as well as the functionality that Compound and Shot brought to the party with their CS Connect and some of their other innovations, enabling us to come up with this successful release one of our Project Server 2013, so that we have the capability now to baseline, measure, and improve on our processes that we've got in place. So I think, you know, this is probably a little bit more complex model than normally I was used to seeing, but having done some consulting with product management in other smaller companies in the past, I think you see a lot of the elements that we've had to deal with up here in some form or fashion. If you get into project execution where you're borrowing or you're sharing resources across other functions, you're sharing budgets across multiple competing initiatives. So although this is a little bit more of a grandiose scale, I don't think the problems that we solved here were problems that you wouldn't see in a lot of other applications. So questions? Sir.
Sectors in business
Sure. So if you so very very autonomous, right? So when you have a portfolio like we have, very strong brand equity products that have been around for as long as they have. So Ingersoll Rand, in and of itself, when you think about the Ingersoll Rand tools, have been around since 1872, right? So you've got that rich heritage, you've got that strong technical aspect and savvy. So when everyone comes in and says, hey, we want you to do some of this stuff different, if you've worked with engineers, you know what their immediate response is going to be to that, right? Not invented here. That's not the way we do it here. You don't understand. So our change management processes are one of the things that we've had to leverage quite a bit in going through some of this. And we're still going down that journey because we have to be able to show success to help people understand how we're going to improve. And we've tried to do this in a collaborative environment. So we didn't develop this from a top down. What we did when we developed the BOS system and when we developed the standard Ingersoll Rand product development process was we took the subject matter experts from all of those, as many of those diverse businesses as we could. We pulled them together as a single team and said, guys, what are our best practices from this stage to this stage? Can we all agree on what that subset of deliverables should be, what we should be leveraging from a tool set, what we should be applying, and sometimes more importantly, not applying, depending on what the product was. So I would say we're over the hump with that journey. We've got our common processes in place. We're starting to understand where there are some foibles in that system, where we need to improve upon that system. But up front, we said, look, you know what, we're going to take a run at this. We're going to pull all the greatest minds we have together. We're going to develop this process. And then we're going to plan to change it every 6 months. Right? Understand what we don't know and build upon that to get that continuous improvement. Right? So we admitted that up front. We don't expect this to be stagnant. We don't expect this to be the same. We're going to learn as we go. And everybody needs to be a part of that. So the buy-in, I think you get... You get a lot more buy-in, you get a lot more participation that way because people will stand up very readily and say, hey, this stuff over here is great, but guess what? This doesn't work for me. Let's look at improving that. That answer your question? Okay, great. Ma'am?
You talked about the Excel tools and everything. So was nobody using any type of other tool besides Excel? And that leads to my second question of, the prototype took about 6 days, but how long did it take you to get your requirements in place with all of your subject matter?
So I think that's about a three-part question. So we were using many other tools. We were using Excel from a lot of planning standpoint, but we also had other systems in place. Because we've bolted on and changed and over the course of the last 20 years, Ingersoll Rand has evolved a lot. So we used to own Bobcat. We used to own the road development equipment, the big steamrollers and all that cool stuff you want to get on. We used to own the portables. So a lot of the places that people see the Ingersoll Rand logo is on the compressor, the portable compressors, with have lights on them or are running some system on the side of the roadway. So as we've bolted all these things on, we're going through an initiative right now. It's called the SMART Initiative. So it's about a $27-30 million initiative where we're getting down to a common set of systems. But the experiences that I had with most of the information that we were developing and getting was coming from Excel. We also have a myriad of MRP system and financial systems that all that stuff has been cleaned up now, so it makes it a lot easier for us to create that future state. So they looked for somebody for my job for about 9 months. And then somebody said, so I popped my head up right at the wrong time. Right now, I'm just kidding. So I had a lot of knowledge because I've worked in all the different aspects. I worked in every sector, virtually every business in the organization in my 25-year tenure. I had a lot of knowledge of, because I was involved with the PMO offices, because I was involved, kind of came from the ground up designing, for implementing products that were designed to designing products to doing what I'm doing now. It took me 4 months of going back and revalidating a year's worth of work that had been done before we engaged in the process. And also, so we had the 6 days, the 2 days, but Marcus was there for 2 weeks, and we were attached at the hip for two weeks, like 10, 12-hour days, right? And lots of beer and chicken wings were eaten during that period of time. But it was a somewhat arduous process, but I already had a lot of the information, already knew where to go get the information. But obviously, if we were starting from afresh, that is going to be, you're going to be, for something our size, that's, I would plan no less than 6 to 9 months or something like that. And that's really important because every minute you spend there is 2 minutes you're not going to waste down the road, right? So, ma'am.
You've talked about your security, and I've imagined the way you segmented the things based on the type of project, but you mentioned that stage gate. Something we struggle with is we want security to be different at this stage gate in the life cycle versus this one.
Sure.
Did you deal with that?
Well, yes and no. So right now, as a part of our process, we've got a common approver set through each stage gate, but as Marcus alluded to, in some projects, in some businesses, they have a varied set. So I think the same solution would work for both of those scenarios, correct?
Correct. So right now we just look at the sector and give the sector people the read access or read-write access. But we could also look at the actual stage where a project is in, and then depending on that, giving different people access to it. Yeah.
So what that's going to require is a different set of lists, a different set of people that you can draw from. But the important thing was getting those people in the right locations, because you can see that some of those people have to have multiple access rights, depending on whether they're the shared functionality across two businesses, three businesses, or all of our business. So nothing is ever all, right? There's always an exception. Well, he's 9, or he's 10, so... what else? Ma'am.
So Microsoft Project Schedules, I'm assuming you use that to feed the tool to get the information back out.
We do both. So we create schedules on PWA, on the web application, as well as, I'm a rich client guy, so I have a really hard time understanding the new windows and the ways to navigate, and I get very upset when you can't do things like resource profiling and contours and that kind of stuff, because that's just the way. But some other people have just about, not opened their project client since they've started using the tool, because they don't have a lot of dependencies, they don't have a lot of integration from, other data sources yet. But I'm guessing, right, once we look at some of those, you think about the networks of excellence and the ETC models, those milestones and deliverables are going to be subsets of a larger business program, and they're going to want to see the updates seamlessly into their schedule. So now we've got to combine and create master projects.
So do you have issues with data quality going in? So the information coming back out? If you have 1,000 or 3,000 line project schedule over 3 years?
I think we're always going to have some of that. But the good thing is that as we mature from a functional process and we move from one person kind of being the owner and the manager of that schedule to multiple people being able to manage their own portions of the project plan and updating, seeing what's happening to the updates through the actual time recording. When you talk about that closed loop right now, guess what? Everybody has to react, because that task is no longer around because it's been consumed, and guess what happens to our pretty pictures, right? As John talks so well about, we can't paint those pretty pictures anymore, right? Because we don't have control over that information. What I just love, because that's something that I've always tried to encourage people to do. Like, hey, you can't hit your plan. You can't meet it, right? You said it's going to take 3 weeks. You haven't even started it, and a week and a half's gone by. Help me understand that. Well, I'll get it done. Guess what? They don't get done. So I think we're going to have some of that, as we mature with the tool, as we mature as building our competency and capability, We're going to have some of those issues, absolutely. We've already, you know, we've planned for it.
So does your project manager control your schedule, or did your core team members go in and say that they've completed it 50% or 100% to make it easier to get more accurate data?
So right now we're working off of the time, about the time completion model, right? So where that's going to go, I think we're going to have some mix, depending on what the initiative is, because we've got, you know, when you think about the breadth and depth of projects and, you know, the scope that we have along the top, there's going to be a couple of different needs for answers up there that that our friends here are going to have to help us out with. Sir?
I apologize if you already said so, but I'm assuming that you're running a single instance to enable that single resource pool to share across all of those different lines of business and stuff?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
And then just using departments for the unique configurations, presentation of my data, right?
So the department field for some separation of the views and the fields, together with the security module we have in place, then we have the full picture.
Yeah, the security model is really where the complication comes in, that this guy has to burn the midnight oil on sometimes.
we have in the system, we have almost 20 security categories, and put projects and people into categories as individuals. So you guys do a lot of reporting at various organizational levels. You can go at the enterprise level, look down at business
Correct.
Level, et cetera.
Correct. But we've also tried to, because we're trying to use that engineering competency model, that project-based engineering, when you look at those groups that span our multiple business units, we try to run those as businesses, not as profit centers, but as businesses. So those entities have responsibility for their resource allocations, for their resource management, and also for their execution. Right, we want that contained, that knowledge base within those engineering modules and those networks of excellence, so that they can react to their changes and they can be responsible for their delivery. And when you think about having to compartmentalize those things, we need to also compartmentalize their data, right? Because they have the right to be able to move some people and do some things without affecting other people's project plans, and that's where we really had to do a little bit of this to figure out how we were going to solutionize that and actualize it, both for the reporting as well as for the resource management and the project management.
It's like we're actually managing the 15 companies within the same instance.
Right. Luckily, that's in release too. So we're just about take my yeah. If you want to click the next slide there, Marcus, don't hesitate to shoot me an email. So we have some thoughts around a schema for that. We've got a couple of different options that we need to look at. We've got three different options. We've got purchase that technology. We've got capability within the rest of our business systems to build that functionality in. And then we've got the capability, obviously, to custom develop that solution. So another SWOT analysis, another spider charts, set of spider charts that we've got to develop. And I'm pretty sure that we've got two really strong options, both to manage. And I'm not as much worried about the investments as I am the benefits. Because a large portion of what our business case entails is when you think about the complexity of that CentriVac project I talked about, where you've got five different product families that are launching in four or five different geographic locations that each have their own need for make versus buy and some of these other things. Now, guess what? You have to list out and time bound all of those revenue streams, the ramp down, ramp up models, and all of that complexity within the financial tool. So that was another reason we said, hey, you know what, we've already got this capability here. Let's don't crack that nut until we have to. But looking forward, we've already given some thought. I think the investments are going to be pretty clean. It's the revenues and how we manage unit volumes, unit price, all those types of things when all that stuff is, you know, flickering like the stock chart. Ma'am. So by design, do you have a core? Exactly, yep, yep.
So the people who come in out, they have, you know, an emphasis in finance, an emphasis in engineering, an emphasis in, you know, whatever. And so, you know, the resource assignment is a huge part.
Sure. So no, we have categories for the administrative time and for vacations and those things as well. Correct.
Okay. And then on the resource pool, because you know this group, you know, this I need a finance person for this project, and I need an engineering person for this project, and I need a legal person for this project. Do you have any way to manage those employee attributes within your resource pool so that when I'm a project manager and I'm told, go execute on this project, and you need an engineering person, that I can pull out of that resource pool the attributes of the person I have, and, you know, also the levels like leadership, preparedness.
Sure. So today we don't. So we have generics that get replaced with belly buttons, is what I call them, right? A real person. That we have, once again, when you look at the maturity of our organization, we have a fairly rich competency model. So we understand what people's competencies are. Is when you think about people within that industrial business, right? Some of my engineers would have two or three different competency profiles because they had worked in the tools division, because they had worked in the compressor or the fluid division, right? So those valuable knowledge bases you want to leverage. So in release three, we're going to be applying those competencies that exist today that were leveraged both to the generics as well as to the individual belly buttons, right? So we can now marry a generic. So I need a generic that's got functional knowledge in fluid products that also understands regulatory requirements, right? So is there three of those guys or are there two of those guys? So I need to put that generic out there, or we may have a hired generic that the functional resource leader replaces with that competency generic because he doesn't have that person, right? So when you're forecasting out 18 months is the model that we're moving to look at our requirements and our capabilities. If you don't have that guy, you need to forecast that generic so that HR knows what to go look for now. That'll be part of our resource and competency model that exists within Project Server 2013, our application.
How does that information get fed in there, what somebody's specialty is?
The engineering managers or the functional managers create those profiles today. So they have a selection list that they pick from. It's drop down, it's done on SharePoint today. So once again, great that we have that maturity, that we have that functionality. Now we just need to marry the two with the selection. Because as a program manager, a lot of times when I get a new program, I'm breaking down, you know, the substantial elements of the work and understanding where the bits and bobs go, right? But what person I need to do that work, because I've been in engineering, I got a pretty good feel that, you know, there's two guys that can do that, and they're both working on these other things, so... But somebody else that was, you know, a year or two into the company or only worked in one side of the business, they're going to have to just say, I need a development engineer. Well, when that information comes to the resource manager now and he looks at the information, talk to the product manager, what is this actually? Do we have, you know, the technology to do this? Then he's going to have to say, guess what? I put a competency generic against that because I don't have that guy. And that sends a signal back, right? Hey, I can't allocate. I'm telling you what you need, what I need. but I can't allocate a belly button to it.
So it's basically an enterprise custom field that you put in there. It says skill, role, competency.
Sure. Another head scratcher.
25 competencies in one competency type. So it might be a product competency. So there's 25 products. And then each of those 25 are further broken down into the skill level 5. So you can go in and say, for this person, you know, I know Fluid and I'm an expert, or I know this and I'm only a beginner. I don't know anything about this. And they can set those competencies.
So whether that person's a level 1 through 4 in that competency, there's only one person that can do that, and that's the engineering lead or the engineering resource manager.
And then you align that to your generics.
Right.
To say we have this much of that skill or that competency.
Yeah, the DICE.
You have to do both. You have to say how much do we have, but then your demand forecast is how much do we need, which the demand would come out of
correct.
The schedule.
Yep, out of the plan. Correct. In Project Server. Yeah.
And so do you plan to include like their training and certification and stuff like that? Or
we in regulatory instances we do that, but in other instances that's with the rating, right? The 1 through 4 captures that type of information. But if it's somebody that take an ASME pressure vessel, for instance, like a boiler or a heat exchanger for an air conditioning unit, that's a specific skill set. You have to be knowledgeable to be certified to produce, because that has to get signed off by a governing body. So in those cases, that would be a certification that we'd call out as a competency separately. Now, that may not be the person doing the work, because in a lot of cases, like when I came into the heat transfer group doing heat transfer design, I had a mentor, so he taught me the tools, and I got about 70% of it and broke some things, and he had to show me, you know, where before, you know, we'd go through those iterations 3 or 4 times on paper before he said, okay, you can go spend some money now, right? Good. All right. Appreciate everybody's time. I hope you got something out of it, and really thank you for attending. Appreciate it.